Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Sorry, I have to give this talk in English because my French is not sufficient enough. It's a great pleasure for me speaking to you today and presenting our research on Quranic manuscripts. Thereby, I am referring to the work, Mr. Marx already mentioned it, which we were doing within the Quranica project. We'll have this presentation split up between me and Mr. Marx, and thereby you will be hearing some basic information. I think this will be one of the bigger parts of the presentation. Some basic information, as well as selected preliminary results of the radiocarbon analysis we did in this campaign, followed by some considerations on the orthography of Quranic manuscripts by Mr. Marx. Then I will jump in with a very small part where I will show some other only first steps in the ink analysis on Quranic and other manuscripts. And finally, Mr. Marx will finish the whole presentation with more in-depth reflections on the significance of the orthographic development and the value of combining material analysis and philological considerations. When completing the proposal for the Quranica project, there was a module included about dating the whole of the Berlin State Library Quranic manuscripts, which are about 100 manuscripts. And luckily, as the project got its funding, the project got this substantial amount of money. Usually a single dating ranges between 400 and 800 euro, depending on quality, speed, and the preparation that needs to be done in cleaning the sample. To the relief of not only the restoration department of the Berlin State Library, I assume, but also to the head of the Oriental Collection, Christoph Rauch, soon the focus of the whole project shifted a little bit and the scope of the dating project became broader and more widespread. So in this more widespread scope, we did not only include parchment, as I'm just giving some example images here, parchment which was written upon with Arabic and Syriac, and I've added that in December, Georgian language, Quranic and Gospel manuscripts, but also we added some papyrus written in Arabic, Greek, Coptic, and we included Quranic texts or fragments of Quranic texts and documentary texts. And this is a third part, the wooden sticks written upon in ancient South Arabian. I will leave that out because it's not of the main concern for this presentation. Besides the Berlin State Library, we got positive answers for this request from certain institutions, namely the Universitätsbibliothek Leiden, the University Library of Tübingen, the Papyrus Collection in Heidelberg, the Bavarian State Library, Chester Beatty Library in Dublin, was already mentioned by Ira Rabin, and in December, the National Century of Manuscripts in Tbilisi, Georgia, and also from private collectors. Sadly, not all institutions we approached could facilitate such a destructive sampling method, namely the Forschungsbibliothek Gotha, Cologne Papyri Collection, the Königliche Bibliothek in Copenhagen, the Oriental Institute Museum in Chicago, and the Österreichische Nationalbibliothek. It's pretty obvious in this map. I think you cannot read it clearly there. I put some green dots for the institutions that allowed us sampling. And there are also some yellowish one, for example, St. Petersburg and the National Library in Algiers, where there is small Kufic manuscript. We're not exactly sure, but we are on communication terms. We try to figure a way out. For those that are not familiar with the method of radiocarbon analysis, the following slide will give a short summary of the obstacles and hindrances for a precise dating of a manuscript. The first problem, it's a destructive technique, which means we need to have a sample which will be sent over to a laboratory and it will be destroyed in due course. The second big problem is the already mentioned possible contamination by older or younger carbon, which would shift the result. These are the material basics. The measured result must then be calibrated and recalculated to get a calendaric date, and thereby we have problems in the precision of those results due to the sample quality, but also due to the calendaric time span. This is a complicated matter about the calibration of those results. So the preciseness depends on in what possible area a result could be, because there are some plateaus where you cannot get very high precision, and in other areas you can get high precision. So sometimes you have results between plus minus 80 years or plus minus some centuries. Also, there could be regional offsets which are, as far as we found out, are dismissible for our region, which means the Near East and those manuscripts. But, why does it work? Apart from that, yes, okay, here it is. I always like to put that question in. What do we measure in radiocarbon analysis? Do we measure the writing of the text, which is the real thing that as a codicologist or as a paleographer or as a philologist is interesting to me? Or do we measure the white writing surface, which means the production date of the parchment? I must admit, I really like that. So the answer is we are measuring the surface and we are not dating the ink, which means it could have been produced. And the problematic about the palimpsests or palimpsests you can detect, other palimpsests that might have happened to be there before you cannot detect. This problem has to be solved in another way or investigated by other means, but not with radiocarbon analysis. So now I will show you just four examples to... How are we with the time? Yeah. Four examples of our dating campaign. This is the earliest manuscript we dated in the Berlin State Library. It's one of the famous, this is a page of the famous Seven Leaves. This is not a very big codex at all. These are just seven single leaves. But additionally, we know that at least in the 1930s, there existed some 31 folia in Cairo. We have them as black and white images, so this page forms part of more than just seven leaves. And we have a very precise dating in that case. Oh, it's up there. So between 606 and 652, with a certainty of on a sigma 2 level, so with a 95.4 percentage. I will come back to that maybe later on if you ask questions about those time spans. Second interesting manuscript, which gained quite some attention last autumn, was the dating of this Tübingen manuscript. We have a quite similarly precise result here, which gives a time span of only 26 years with the same certainty. But now we come to, it's in chronological order, we come to a later manuscript, which is only, which are only two folia hosted or sitting in the Leiden University Library. But those are sibling pages to the manuscript 331 in the BNF, the Bibliothèque Nationale de France. So even if we did not have access to the BNF manuscripts until now, you can do it if you combine the different fragments spread out across libraries and try to date them. Here you have a very big time span, a little bit later, quite similarly like the very big codex with about 210 folio in Berlin's late library again, the Wettstein 1913, which has a quite similar time span, starting a little bit later, but similarly extending up until 665. I will have 1 minute. I will talk about this for 1 minute. The problem that you can see here, you have two time spans, and in the middle there's a gap. So it should not be from the year 620, let's say. Of course, that's not really probable. The problem lies in this blue curve here, which is the basis of calibrating the results. The result is the red thing. The red measurement values have to be projected onto the blue calibrated line, and this calibration is based on measurements taken in dendrochronological samples, and then we get the grayish result, and in that case we have a very big time span. This result is highly imprecise, whereas the first two, where the measurement was far away from this plateau here, the result got pretty precise. Still, there are many problems writing surface and not the writing itself. And after those images, I will switch over to Mr. Marx.
About orthography, so it was the idea to use natural sciences for the dating of manuscripts. We have, of course, other parameters that give us information about dating, like the paleography, also codicological indicators, also very banal things like the format, the fact that it's a parchment, but it's in a vertical format, and not like the Kufic manuscripts in a horizontal format. What is as well interesting, I want to bring your attention to writing, to orthography and its development. Moment. So that means in the Tübingen manuscript, as already has been found out and observed and published by Alba Fedeli, who is with us, we have a number of very odd qira'at, like, for instance, marjumin instead of Mukhrajin. So we have synonyms two or three times. We have, for instance, at this page, Muflihun instead of Muslimun, also a kind of synonym. Both do not appear in the standard literature about variant readings. Typologically, they are what we call qira'at shadha, uncanonical readings, similar types of these variant readings we find in the literature in abundant dimension. It is interesting that the Tübingen manuscripts contains such qira'at shadha on the parchment itself. Actually, these tables have been produced by people in the internet after this whole media campaign. I found it very useful. This table has been produced by an anonymous person, not anonymous, his name is Wissam Kablan, who followed who had a blog on these Tübingen manuscripts at the time when these early dates were published. They went through the media and created in many blogs and news groups and social media kinds of discussion. One thing that I want to talk about precisely is the spelling of the name David, Dawood, Dawood. In the Tübingen manuscript, it appears, as you see here, sometimes as Duat, Dal, Wau, Aleph, Dal, sometimes as Dal, Aleph, Wau, Aleph, the orthography that we know today. Now, if we look closely, may I use this? Hier oben, ne? Moment. So here we have the classical, our spelling, but we understand that there is something odd because the ink color is different and we have other spellings where it looks like this. Now, if we take a case like this also in Tübingen, we see in the comment, but you see it. The upper example has been overwritten and the others show it as well. So the original spelling was Dal, Wow, Aleph, Dal, which is quite odd. Actually, if we look into the Berlin manuscript, the London manuscript, the Paris other manuscript of that time, also the ones that we have carbon dated, like the manuscript 4313 of Berlin, we find this quite odd spelling. Other things that are complicated and that we hope to clarify with the help of ink analysis is the spelling of the word Quran, which in Tübingen oftentimes, I mean, originally had three letters, Al, Kaf, Re, Nun. So it seems the Aleph is not written as if it is true what has been said, that in the Hijaz, the Hamza, the glottal glottal stop has not been pronounced. In the Tübingen manuscript, Quran is written with no Aleph indicating the glottal stop. But we find, in some cases, we find the Aleph written, and it seems that this has been added at a later stage. The case in the lower line shows that the ink has been chosen, a quite similar ink has been chosen. So if we start now in our new project, this would be an object to measure out. We have other catchwords like Kala, Janat, Dawood. Also the word Shai is interesting with its spelling like, So we have other catchwords. One important one is the spelling of Shai, Sheen, Aleph, Ya. Yeah, Sheen, Aleph, Ya. Different from what is today the spelling Sheen, Ya. Also a recurrent observation we have. And I conclude with the difficulties of the ink layers with this word. In the original spelling, it was something like Sayyatihi. Then ink has been added, and it seems the red ink is the third ink that is coming. Yeah? That means ink number one, here erased, here the ink number one. But here this element has been added after the Aleph has been removed, and one has the impression here to see clearly that the red ink, noting the harakat, the vowels, came in a third step.
Which leads back to the ink analysis, where I cannot give such nice and such valuable analysis as Mrs. Rabin already presented, but I will show you what I could do when I went, for example, to Tbilisi in last December. This is the so-called Lailashi Bible. So it's a Hebrew Bible, and it's pretty huge. We were allowed to take quite some samples of this Bible, as well as some Georgian manuscripts, especially, if I remember correctly, it were also two or three, at least two, Georgian palimpsests, which might be later on very interesting to investigate, considering the ink questions as well. And you already saw in the foregoing presentation a small dynolite, a small USB connectable microscope where you can do images like that. And so I just, for first testing purposes, I took images in visible light to the right with number C. This is of clearly the infrared image, and in the middle you have the ultraviolet image. It's clearly visible that the basic text, the main text, has been written in a non-carbon-based ink because it's completely gone under infrared lighting. Similarly, I am, as Mr. Marx already mentioned, I'm correcting my transliteration of the Chester Beatty Library manuscript. I need to correct you, it's 1615, not 1605. It's 1615, it's a shelf mark of the Chester Beatty Library manuscript. And here it's the same, even in this ultraviolet image, the inks look pretty different. But it's completely clearly visible then in the infrared image that the addition of the Lam Aleph is was made with a carbon-based ink later on. Together with, I think it was Oliver Hahn, you saw some measurements before in the presentation. This was the spot where we could measure, in one case, the Wettstein Codex, the ink of the Wettstein Codex. Sadly, it's not colored here, so it's hard to distinguish between the parchment, the original writing, and the corrected writing. But it's parchment. The curve of the iron that is here ends here from the parchment. Here is the ending of the original layer of the ink, and then there's a very high peak, twice the size, for the correcting ink at this particular spot. These were the first measurements, but with also with Palio Koran, but also a possible already proposed project we are trying to investigate further into the inks in Quranic manuscripts.
Mm-hmm. Ink in this case, obviously, one has the impression the wow has been added. If it has been added a year after or 100 years after, we don't know. But at least we get a result that is clearly a completely different ink. Now, orthography today. What I mean is, how is the Quran today spelled when it's written? Here we have one chapter from the Treaty of Adani, an Andalusian scholar of the 11th century, who wrote a treatise among four other treatises that are relevant for the Quran spelling today. Now, here in the last line, he says, it is always li ahaba, for a passage of the 19th verse of Surat Maryam, the 19th surah of the Quran. And actually one wonders where his knowledge is coming. He claims that he has consulted manuscripts, and he said there's a certain consensus in the manuscript that I have consulted for the spelling Lam Alif Ha Ba for Li Ahaba. Actually, if we look into manuscripts, we find two exceptions. One is the Sana'a Palimpsest and the London Codex 2165, so it's 2165 here, where we have Li Ahaba. This brings us back to our famous spelling of Daoud, David. As you know, in classic Arabic grammar, there's a debate if it's Daoud or Daoud. The second one is having a Hamza, glottal stop. Now, if we have the spelling Dal, Wow, Aleph, Dal, which is not at all observed in the described in the literature, we may wonder how that was to pronounce. One might suggest something like Daud, a long A, be noted by the long by the letter Wow and the Aleph for the glottal stop, because in the ancient pre-Islamic attestations of Arabic, the letter Aleph has always the function of being a sign for the glottal stop. It is not, or almost not, used for the long vowel A, especially in middle position. So, and on the contrary, we find in other languages, like in a Sabaic inscriptions of the 6th century in the Wellcome collections in a publication by Beeston in the journal Raidan, number 3, we find the spelling of Sana'a, the city in Yemen, Sana'a, where the long Aleph is spelled with a Waw as well. And you may recall passages in the Quran where Salat, for instance, is written with a Waw, which could also point to this kind of fact. Anyhow, we don't know. actually how this was pronounced, but it's interesting that all the ancient manuscripts present the name of Dawood in that way. Now, today's orthography in the Quran, as is seen here by the two afterwards on the right side, the one from Medina edition of the Quran, on the left side, the first Cairene print of 1924, where it is claimed that the orthography of the text follows the two Andalusian scholars, Adani and Ibn Najjar. They are both mentioned here. Strangely enough, in the Saudi version of the afterword to the printed edition recently, one has added Ghaliban, وَقَدْ يُؤْخَذُ بِقَوْلِ غَيْرِهِمَا. In the most cases, we were following Dani and Ibn Najjar, but also other sources without naming them. Anyhow, it is also interesting how much technical questions come here into game. What I want to show here is that the name Allah in the typeset edition or in the edition of Cairo, written with a short alif, for technical reasons, it was very difficult to include the long dagger alif pending. So I want to say in the Cairo edition, the name of God is spelled wrongly. If one wants to say so, and this has been corrected, like on the left side in the official Iranian Mus'haf that has been used, for which has been used a special typeset named Osman Taha to follow a bit the Medinan typeset, so they have corrected this mistake. If you check it in the Medinan edition itself, you will find that they followed blindly. So I come back to a question with which I want to conclude. Yes, it's true that we have at least some sources like Ibn Abi Dawud al-Sijistani, Kitab al-Masahif. We have Adani, the Andalusian scholar, with his Kitab al-Muqni fi Rasm al-Masahif. We have works like Abu Ubaid's Fada'il al-Quran, and they are talking about manuscripts. Also, this morning we learned about the debate on the interpretation of Ibn Nadim's a description of the Hijazi type. Actually, we never know precisely what kind of manuscripts these people had consulted. Yeah, it's very odd that, for instance, the spelling of Duat is never mentioned by these authors. So actually, this perhaps points to the fact that even in classical scholarship of the 3rd, 4th Islamic century, already a little bit the memory and the historical understanding of what had been taken place in the centuries before had been lost. I have to close here. So we have a lot of hope and are very optimistic concerning techniques from natural sciences that could help us, like ink analysis, but also the carbon dating. And thank you very much.